Nancy and Richard Lyon live a perfect life.
Very warm and friendly, very caring for each other.
They seem to have lots of friends. They seem to enjoy each other.
In a perfect neighborhood.
The people who lived there believed that they were somewhat insulated from the ugliness of the outside world.
Or so it seems. In reality, nothing can protect them from each other.
I mean, this was a long, ongoing killing. Some very elementary mistakes.
Trying to process that information in my mind, like, how on earth could that happen?
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. Nancy Dillard and Richard Lyon are going places. This perfect couple meets at Harvard in 1979, where Richard slowly wins the affections of his elegant, well-bred classmate. 3 years later, Richard and Nancy are married and living back in Nancy's hometown, Park Cities, a leafy, well-heeled community in the booming, oil-rich city of Dallas, Texas. As a local journalist, Glenda Vosburgh got to know this neighborhood and its affluent occupants.
People refer to the Park Cities as the bubble. The people who lived there believed that they were somewhat insulated from the ugliness of the outside world.
As Nancy and Richard Lyon settle into the Park Cities life, they make a favorable impression on new neighbors and colleagues.
He worked hard, and he could be serious. But at the same time, he would laugh with you and laugh about things. And he was very good with people, all kinds of people. We got to know Nancy real well, and she was just a sweetheart. I mean, just a really neat lady.
Richard and Nancy are from two very different worlds. Nancy grew up in the toniest neighborhood in all of Texas, a world of debutantes, country clubs, big money, and even bigger egos. Her father, William Dillard, is a successful real estate developer, known around Dallas as Big Daddy, a testament to his influence and financial clout. Richard Lyon, on the other hand, hails from mundane middle-class Connecticut.
I had the impression that his upbringing was very different. Maybe it was culture shock for him at first. It was a lot different world than I think that he was used to.
Relationship expert Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell see the class difference as a crucial element of this marriage.
Nancy was raised really at the top of the hierarchy, and Richard was much more of a simple guy, raised with simple things. And those two things are bound to create problems between them.
I think that in some ways, he was probably particularly attractive to her precisely because he seemed to have a little bit looser approach to life. When people are raised differently, they have different expectations about what life will be like as adults and when they're married. And he could feel resentful that he's having all kinds of pressures that he never feels he signed up for.
Despite Nancy's family money, the couple adopt a surprisingly frugal lifestyle.
Very humble, not like a lot of people with old money that were snooty and seemed to be above everybody else. They had a house in Highland Park, but it was a duplex. Very simple lifestyle. Richard drove an old 65 Mustang, and it was not a classic car. It was an old beat-up car that the floorboards were all rusted out. He had to put rubber floor mats in there to keep, you know, water and mud from coming up on his suit legs. It was pretty funny, actually.
This couple may be low-key, but their careers are on the up-and-up. Big Daddy finds them well-paid jobs in real estate.
Richard, frankly, helped me get started. And the first project, one of my biggest concerns was cash flow. And so the first draw I turned in to him, the application for payment, he forgot to process it. And I was most upset. And I went into his office and sat down and I was quite angry. and he reached in his coat pocket and pulled out a checkbook and wrote me a personal check. And I had never done business with anybody like that, that stood behind what they said. It really made an impression, a strong impression on me.
After 7 years of marriage, the Lyons have two beautiful daughters, doted on by both mother and father. And this being Park City's, they hire a nanny to look after them, Lynn Pease Woods.
I thought it was a wonderful family to work for. When I first started working for them, I just thought that they were an average family. I didn't really know how much Oriental rugs or antique furniture cost or George Jensen silver. And I realized later that there must be some finances there.
1989. Everything is perfect, at least on the outside. But even for a modern couple like Richard and Nancy, class casts an ever-present shadow.
I think Richard probably did have a hard time feeling accepted. Whether he was being accepted or not, I think feeling like you were accepted if you came from a different background. Being dropped down in the middle of the Park Cities when you're not used to that kind of life can be very intimidating and overwhelming. But it can also be a bit addictive once you get into the lifestyle.
Whether it's the influence of Park Cities or the pressure of work, Lynn finds that Nancy's attitude is starting to change for the worse.
She always wanted to make sure she got her money's worth from me. She would come home and she would say, "Lynn, what did you do this morning?" And I would go through, "Well, I made the food salad." And she said, "Well, that shouldn't take that much time."
Perhaps Nancy resents Lynn for her strong emotional bond with their two young daughters.
I didn't think she valued me as much as she should because I adored her children so much.
But Lynn finds Richard friendlier and more generous.
He was nice to me. Sometimes very nice, like he would cook me dinner before I got there on a Saturday night to babysit for them while they went out.
There's also some friction within the marriage. Nancy insists that her husband keep up appearances and stay true to the spirit of posh Park Cities.
Every morning, she picked out his suit and his tie because she liked him to look a certain way. She liked him to do things a certain way. Like, he liked to mow the front yard. And she said, "Richard, you can't do that. We have a yard man to do that." She could be controlling.
Women have this bad habit of wanting to be the fixers. We think that if we try enough things, if we smile enough, if we do what we think is right, we might be able to get the man to change. And I think Nancy lived that way almost every day.
But Richard is becoming increasingly secretive and suspicious.
And we had a housekeeper come for the day, and she had cleaned out her closet. And so I went up, and there was $5,000 in cash on the bed. So I called Nancy. She came home, and she thought that it must have been some money from rental property. She wasn't sure what it was. She asked Richard, "Where did that money come from?" But I think that that was a little bit of concern.
But there are some things that even Nancy cannot control. At a detox center in Tucson, Arizona, her older brother, Bill Jr., is undergoing treatment for alcoholism. The Dillard family, with Richard in tow, pay him a visit. They undergo family therapy sessions in an attempt to help his addiction. Nancy feels compelled to confess some shocking family secrets. In their early teenage years, she and her brother would often engage in sexual play, a relationship bordering on incest. Perhaps these skeletons from Nancy's past were better left buried. Her brother, Bill Jr., may not have appreciated airing their secrets in public, And the admission did nothing to help Nancy and Richard's sex life.
The impression was that her emotional problems affected her relationship. She was a little withdrawn from him, maybe even a little cold sexually, and that maybe that part of their marriage was not up to what Richard wanted.
Even if it's just a case of two kids playing doctor and nurse's children, it could easily affect Richard. You don't want to think about your life partner having had any kind of physical contact like that with a relative.
I think that a supportive husband would have tried to do whatever he could to help his wife do the work that she needed to do in therapy, or do whatever she needed to do to sort of get past that in the marriage and be patient with her as they tried to restore their normal marriage relations with one another.
Perhaps Nancy's confession has pushed Richard away. Perhaps it's her controlling behavior. Whatever the true reasons, he starts looking outside the marriage for solace.
I was shocked at that.
Nancy found out. And she was very upset.
It all started so well for Nancy and Richard Lyon. Friends and family witnessed the happy marriage firsthand.
They seemed to have lots of friends. They seemed to enjoy each other.
Very warm and friendly, very caring for each other. Richard would pull her chair out for her to sit her down at the dinner table, you know, very classy. I never saw them raise their voices to each other at all. Very respectful.
I personally wasn't attracted to him at all. But I could see where Nancy would be. I think other women would be attracted to him. He was sensitive and kind.
After Nancy's startling confession that she had been sexually intimate with her brother as a young teenager, Richard seeks the affections of a younger woman. A pretty, smart, blonde contractor named Anne Gaisford.
He just didn't strike me as that type at all, and we were working crazy hours. I don't know how he had time to have an affair, frankly. It really surprised me. Shocked me, actually.
Anne Gaisford finds a mentor and friend in Richard Lyon, and finally, a lover. A one-night stand turns into a fling, and the fling turns into an affair. But Richard is careless, and Nancy becomes suspicious.
She called Richard once when he was on a business trip to New York. And it wasn't a business trip. He was at a hotel with a mistress. And Nancy found out. And she was very upset. And then she had sweatshirts delivered, two sweatshirts, with Harvard on them. They weren't meant to be delivered to the house because Richard had ordered them for him and his mistress.
As the torrid affair intensifies, Richard makes no real attempt to keep it a secret.
I think it was devastating for Nancy that Richard was so open about the affair. She comes from a family where image is important. And here, not only is her husband cheating on her, but he's talking about it.
Yeah, it would be horrible. At least if the spouse is trying to hide the infidelity, one could delude oneself into thinking that part of the reason is to try to spare them the hurt involved. But when the person is being open about it, there's an intentional infliction of harm involved in that.
After 6 months of this humiliation, Nancy has had enough. She orders Richard to get out. Soon after Christmas, 1989, Richard packs his bags and leaves his wife and two daughters.
I left her crying every day. She was very sad about it. She wanted her marriage to work.
As winter turns into spring, Nancy is left alone to deal with a new problem at their Shenandoah Avenue home. Apparently, there's an infestation of fire ants, a common pest in Texas, even in the posh suburbs of Park Cities. Nancy turns to Richard and asks for help. Perhaps the fire ants are simply an excuse to bring Richard back into the family home. If so, it doesn't work. As her husband openly continues the affair, his behavior becomes increasingly excessive. Richard is spending uncontrollably on cars, expensive restaurants, and gifts for Anne, including a $5,000 Cartier ring.
He was buying expensive jewelry, and she knew she wasn't getting any of it. And so that was a warning sign to her. And she confronted him about those things. She was very upset.
As the marriage moves from one crisis to the next, Nancy's health starts to suffer. She's pale and drawn, and suffers from unexplained bouts of nausea.
I thought that she was very thin. Other people were concerned about that.
The pressure on Nancy is made worse by her involvement in a lawsuit with her former boss at Trammell Crowe. She found evidence that he was misusing company funds and may be called to testify in this bitter legal dispute. Another stress that's starting to weigh her down. Nancy decides to deal with the thing that is making her most unhappy, her marriage. Nancy writes to her husband, telling him that enough is enough. The letter reads, "Over the last year, I have been willing to forgive and overlook your indifference, cruelty, and destructive criticism." Nancy asks for a clean break. Richard grants her wishes and files for divorce. Nancy requests sole custody of the children in addition to child support from Richard. At this point, Richard seems willing to accept the terms. Nancy also removes Richard as a beneficiary of her life insurance policy. Instead, she leaves the money to her two young daughters.
She didn't want Richard to get it because he was out of the house. And she thought he was going to divorce her. And she definitely wanted the children to benefit from it.
As the divorce proceedings get underway, there's an unmistakable sign that Richard is unwilling to let the marriage die. Nancy receives an unexpected gift, a gift that she assumes is from her husband.
She brought it in. There was a note to a very beautiful woman that I think so much of, or something like that. And so I was like, oh, Nancy, this is so nice. But she was a little dubious about it.
These small gestures of reconciliation seem to be working. Nancy and Richard even go on dates together. Nancy seems determined to repair the damage and start over.
She didn't want to be a divorced woman. I think she was very success-oriented. And she wanted to live up to what her father would have expected of her, which would have been success in a marriage.
I think Nancy is reluctant to end this marriage for a couple of reasons. First of all, she's invested a lot of time and energy in molding this man into the kind of man she wanted. And so to give up on that would be a defeat. I also think that she comes from a family where image is important and people tend to stay married. So she wants to keep that image up and she wants to keep the marriage going.
While Nancy pours her energies into reconciliation with Richard, his presence does not seem to help her health, which continues to fail.
So I went and took care of the children for the weekend, and they went skiing. And they came home, and I said, "Did you have a nice time?" And Nancy said, "I was sick the whole time." Apparently, she was vomiting the whole time of the ski trip. No, she did not have a nice time.
Still, as the year draws to a close, the prospects for saving this marriage grow brighter. Richard instructs his attorney to halt the divorce proceedings. He also promises to end the affair, lying to Anne that Nancy is suffering from a rare blood disease. That Christmas, Richard and Nancy even take a family vacation together. But 3 weeks later, the real reason for Nancy's sickness will be revealed.
She was writhing in pain.
I never could have imagined that that was Nancy.
Nancy Lyon has endured her husband's infidelity, but is determined to make her marriage work. By January 1991, just as the marriage seems to be getting back on track, the unexplained nausea that has been plaguing her for months becomes impossible to endure. As her pain becomes severe, Richard rushes his wife to the hospital. A family friend, Gary Perkins, finds him in a state of shock.
He seemed very distraught, very upset, very worried about what was going on. Did not seem himself at all.
Dr. Ali Bagheri, then a resident at the Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, is the first doctor to see Nancy.
I first examined her. It was in the emergency room that morning when I came on, and she was a lot of distress, and she was very sick. She was in a lot of pain, and she was having a lot of nausea, vomiting.
The symptoms are typical of a severe stomach flu, but Dr. Bagheri believes she's suffering from something more serious.
She was writhing in pain, and she kept asking, please help me, please help me. And she had a lot of abnormalities in her electrolytes, and she also, her liver enzymes were very, very sky high, very elevated.
Dr. Bagheri orders a battery of tests, suspecting Nancy has ingested something toxic.
I came out of her room, and her husband, Richard, arrived. And I talked to him outside the room. He introduced himself. And then I told him we had also sent some additional tests. And I said, well, this is the checking for heavy metals, including like lead, mercury, and the minute I say arsenic, his pupils dilated. I mean, I was looking right in his face, and he goes, what makes you think about the heavy metals and arsenic and so on? Why are you checking for those things? I said, well, nothing. I mean, just checking those for the sake of completeness.
Nancy's father, William Dillard, seeks out Dr. Bagheri with what he believes is some vital information.
So he pulled me to the side. He goes, well, I didn't know if you knew this, but Nancy and Richard, they've been having some rough times in their marriage and marital problems, and they've actually been separated recently.
Dillard tells the doctor about the bottle of wine given to Nancy 4 months earlier, which he believes made her sick.
She took the bottle in and she drank some of that wine. And she later on became very ill, and she was throwing up. She had some nausea, vomiting, so on.
Suddenly, an unexplained illness may be turning into something far more sinister.
Her condition was not getting better, and she was seen by multiple consultants. They were all seeing her, and everybody was puzzled.
Lynn, the family nanny, is shocked when she sees Nancy's condition.
I saw her, and I never could have imagined that that was Nancy. She was so bloated, and she was so sick, and it was very sad.
By the next day, Nancy's organs begin to shut down. She sinks into a coma.
Her condition had deteriorated, and they had to put her on artificial life support and mechanical ventilation to maintain her oxygen level elevated.
At this point, Richard and the Dillard family have a very tough decision to make, whether to take her off life support.
My intern approached me, came to me and said, hey, everybody have decided to withdraw care on Nancy. And her husband came to me, and they have discussed it all, and that was their decision.
Something's not right. Dr. Bagheri decides to ask whether Nancy's parents agree with the decision.
And I understand you all had made the decision to stop life support and turning off all the medications. And he said, no, who told you that? He had no knowledge of this. By then, I knew there was something at a very high level of suspicion, and I knew there was something fishy going on.
Richard's request raises an immediate red flag for Dr. Bagheri. He decides to alert the authorities of his suspicions.
So I called the medical examiner's office, and I told him, listen, I have a patient here, and she's critically ill, and I suspect foul play.
The family disagreement becomes moot as Nancy suffers total organ failure. Within a few hours, her heart stops and she dies.
I was actually there at the hospital with Richard when she passed away and drove him home from the hospital. And it was a very sad day. It really upset me, and I was more shocked than anything. I just couldn't believe someone as healthy as she was and beautiful could pass away that quick. He was very distraught, very upset, didn't talk much.
The news of Nancy's death shocks the residents of the Park City's neighborhood and quickly becomes the subject of rumors and gossip. Some of those rumors hint that Nancy Dillard Lyon did not die of natural causes.
I couldn't believe who would have poisoned her.
Will a startling deathbed revelation lead to a killer? Nancy Lyon, long-suffering wife, doting mother, and adored daughter of a high-profile Dallas family, is dead. The official cause of death is declared to be septic shock, but the doctors and her parents suspect foul play and order an autopsy. Meanwhile, Nancy's husband, Richard, starts the process of tying up her financial affairs.
I said, well, Richard, if you're gonna look into the life insurance policy, don't be surprised if it's been changed. And he said Nancy would never do that without discussing it with me.
In fact, Nancy did change the policy. Their two children will now receive all the money.
I think he wanted the money. Wouldn't anybody prefer $1 million to nothing?
News of the doctor's suspicions have now reached the ears of the Dallas Police Department. Detectives pay Dr. Bagheri a visit.
They asked me everything from the beginning till the end, what had happened.
And what Dr. Bagheri has to say will shock investigators. He recounts the last conversation they had before Nancy slipped into a coma. She told him that she'd taken unmarked pills given to her by Richard.
She said, well, he has been giving me this capsules, and he said, these are vitamins, these are good for you.
She also tells Dr. Bagheri about an outing to the movies. Richard bought her a soda with something suspicious floating on top.
It was dark in the theater, and then she said she took a sip out of it, and she said it tasted awful. And she looked in the cup, and then there was a powder, and it was like a powdered aspirin.
Finally, the test results come back. The heavy metal screen confirms the worst. Nancy has been poisoned with arsenic.
Her urine arsenic level was sky high, very elevated. So, I mean, it was arsenic poisoning. And then you put all the pieces of puzzle together, the labs, everything else is all fit.
Arsenic kills slowly and painfully. At first, there are headaches, vomiting, and diarrhea. Then convulsions and cramp. Lungs, kidneys, and the liver start to fail. With high doses, coma and death are inevitable. Nancy Lyon dies from a poison that used to be called inheritance powder.
The medical examiner, the cause of death was acute on chronic arsenic poisoning. They had found arsenic in all her organs, including her liver, her spleen, her lungs, her hair, nails, every organ in her body.
The autopsy proves that the poison was ingested over many months. Her death, if it proves to be murder, amounts to a long and deliberate act of homicide. The case becomes a criminal investigation, and the police focus on the most obvious suspect. 4 months after Nancy's death, Richard Lyon is charged with first-degree murder. Friends and neighbors are stunned.
I couldn't believe who would have poisoned her. I didn't assume it was Richard. I didn't know how she got poisoned.
I was shocked, and then trying to process that information in my mind, like, how on earth could that happen? Or I couldn't believe that they had arrested him. It really upset me, like, what on earth is going on? I just couldn't understand that at all.
Arsenic is kind of a really terrifying way to murder someone. It was a high-profile family, so it was everyone knew the people involved.
They just seemed like a loving married couple to me. And I wouldn't have thought that in loving parents, I couldn't imagine this ever happening.
I thought he was innocent, you know, just based on his character and the way he conducted himself around me. And he was a very stand-up guy.
We knew, we were convinced that he did it. I wasn't convinced I could prove it. Richard was our only suspect, really, we ever had. We knew it was going to be circumstantial, and it was going to be difficult because of the personalities and the notoriety.
What's more, Sims has no direct proof that Richard administered the poison.
Well, originally, we looked really hard to try to put arsenic or poisons in his hand where he would have obtained it. Evidence to prove that he had access to it.
Prosecutor Sims turns to the Lyons' friends, family, and colleagues, exploring motive and opportunity.
You had to understand Nancy, I thought, before you could understand how this happened. And I finally understood. I learned enough from her friends and family. I finally understood her.
She suspects Richard wanted to keep the family connections without the inconvenience of staying married.
He did not want to move outside of the Dillard circle and lose the acceptance and what came with being known as a Dillard. He wanted the children. He wanted to be part of the Dillard clan. And he wanted to be a Dillard, and he wasn't going to be if she divorced him. He didn't just not want to be married to Nancy anymore. I think he kind of despised her. And he wanted her gone.
But those who know the family are convinced of Richard's innocence.
I think he came across as a loving father, very loving father, really loved his daughters. And it's difficult to understand how a loving father could just decide to kill their mother.
Richard's defense lawyer, Rob Guthrie, quickly dispels the notion that this will be an easy ride for the prosecution. Guthrie claims that the trial will be nothing short of a Perry Mason whodunit. He has not just one alternative suspect, he has four. The judge, John Cruzo, is unsurprised by Guthrie's showboating tactics.
It's not unusual, I think, a lawyer of that caliber and a case of that magnitude to make those kinds of statements, because it will be going to trial, and whatever they say will be publicized. Get some expectations that this isn't some lay-down case, that the state's going to come in and roll over this guy, but there are other suspects out there, and it's lots of intrigue and all that.
And when the trial begins, it causes a sensation.
You couldn't go to a party or a gathering or a school or community event in the Park Cities without hearing about the trial and the story. You couldn't. Everyone was talking about it.
The trial has been underway barely a few hours when Guthrie introduces his first suspect, Nancy's brother, Bill Jr. The Dillard Dirty Laundry is hung out in full view of Dallas society. Under cross-examination, Nancy's father admits that incest between Nancy and Bill Jr. took place, but dismisses it as two kids playing doctor.
Defense attorney goes up and he hands the father a stack of paper that I'd never seen before, the father had never seen before, and asked him to identify it. And he said, well, is that Nancy's handwriting? And he said, yes, it was. And then they start reading off the paper. And I'm kind of at that point a little helpless because I'm not sure what all it says.
The papers are pages from Nancy's handwritten notebook. The note suggests that Nancy was terrified that her brother wanted revenge after she revealed their incestuous past. It reads, "Fear of reprisal, fear of Bill and what his desires are, sex, sick sex, incestuous with me, my girls." It makes Bill Jr. a possible suspect in the murder of his sister.
So I had to just sit there and just act like I knew what was happening and everything was fine. And I'd seen enough of her handwriting to know it did look like hers. And I thought, there's got to be some way either to disprove some of this stuff or he's not guilty and we got the wrong guy sitting here.
I do think it's possible that Nancy's brother harbored anger towards her. She humiliated him in the family. And over time, he may have grown angry. However, I do not believe that his anger would have resulted in a long-term poisoning.
Yeah, it would have been a rage killing if it were the brother, in my opinion. One single violent incident.
If that's not enough for the bewildered jury, Richard's attorney introduces a second possible suspect. Nancy's former boss, David Bagwell, has been sued by the company for misappropriating over $700,000. Nancy was a potential witness against him, and because of that, it seemed she was a target. Richard's defense lawyer produces a letter written to Nancy, which contains a terrifying threat. It reads, "Stay out of the Bagwell case, or you and your family will face the wrath of God."
Nancy had been scheduled to testify against him, and he had a brother that was a doctor that worked at the hospital where Nancy died, and so the theory was there that they killed her because they were angry at her, and that was the most I ever understood about that.
In order for a person to poison another person in the way that Nancy was, they'd need to have access. And so it's hard for me to imagine that a former business associate would have the kind of access needed to make her as sick as she became.
A third suspect did have access to Nancy, the nanny, Lynn Pease Woods. Richard's lawyer claims she has an obsessive attachment to the two girls and wanted them for herself.
Other people said, I know Bill Dillard Jr. And I know Richard, and I know neither of them would have killed Nancy. It must have been the nanny. Richard wanted to make it look like I wanted to kill Nancy and have the children at my house.
Lynn protests that she never wanted the two girls for herself.
I had no intentions of having them live with me. I just like for them to come and stay. Surely wouldn't murder. I didn't have any criminal history or it wasn't in my lifestyle or anything. It just was bizarre.
The nanny couldn't have been a sweeter, nicer person. And not that you can't be fooled, but you know, we spent hours talking to her. She loved the kids. She would have never. She loved Nancy.
This trifecta of murder suspects doesn't do much to deflect attention from Richard. But a fourth suspect is about to tip the case on its head.
She was taking the arsenic to make herself sick in order to get him to come home.
Richard Lyon stands accused of the murder of his wife, Nancy. A murder committed slowly and painfully over months with small doses of arsenic. But Richard's lawyer, Dan Guthrie, believes he's got evidence that will absolve his client. He says he will prove that Nancy took her own life. And to prove it, he revisits the fire ant infestation at the family home on Shenandoah Avenue. The defense calls a witness who claims it was Nancy who paid a visit to the chemical company, asking about ant poison. That witness is company owner Charles Couch.
She inquired about ant killers. I said, we're not in that business. And I said, to buy the chemicals you want, you got to have a license, you know. You tell she was a smart woman, you know. When you're talking about chemical formulation stuff, you can go over people's head real fast, but she seemed to grasp a lot of what I was trying to tell her.
The defense even produces a receipt, which shows in black and white that Nancy, not Richard, had ordered massive quantities of arsenic trioxide, enough to kill the entire neighborhood. And according to the nanny, there was no fire ant problem at Shenandoah Avenue.
The children played out there every day. We went out there to the garden every day. There were no fire ants in the house or in the backyard.
Guthrie argues that there's only one reason why Nancy ordered arsenic. She wanted to take her own life. Under great pressure at work and at home, was this a cry for help or a genuine suicide attempt? And in her deathbed confession, did she deliberately try and frame her husband for her own murder?
You know, in my job, in our line of work, anything's possible. I mean, people do the damnedest things all the time.
An expert psychiatrist, James Grigson, testifies for the defense. He says Nancy took the poison in order to bring Richard back home and save the marriage, a ploy that went horribly wrong.
He took the stand and testified that he believed that she'd killed herself. And we were floored. I mean, it was outlandish. And so we kind of sit there with our jaws dropped. It was just outrageous that would even be. And then when I asked him on cross, I said, well, how did you come to this conclusion? Did you know her? No. Did you ever meet her? No. Have you talked to her family? I went down a long list of, have you talked to these people? No. I asked him if he had ever met the defendant. No. And I said, well, Dr. Grigson, where do you get it? Where does this come from that she killed herself? From reading the newspaper, the facts in the newspaper.
I don't think that's possible at all. First of all, when women tend to want to kill themselves, they try to do it as painlessly as possible, typically with sleeping pills, something they're not going to feel. And this experience that she went through was extraordinarily painful and traumatic.
Now, there is such a thing as factitious disorder, where somebody doesn't want to kill themselves, but they want to make themselves sick for the attention that they'll gain. But when someone does that, they don't tend to actually do something that's horrendously painful, like poisoning oneself with arsenic. They tend to just fake the symptoms. There's no need to actively actually create the symptoms.
Lynn is convinced Nancy was not suicidal.
She cried all the time when I was working for her at the end. So I went and said, Nancy, are you considering suicide? And she said, heck no. She said, I have a lot of problems in my life, but that's not one of them.
The theory was that if she were sick, that Richard would come home. He would come home to take care of Nancy and come home to take care of the children. Arsenic seemed a bit extreme. If you were going to make yourself sick, there are a lot of other ways to do it. But that was the theory.
The defense appears to have the advantage, but a key witness is about to change the course of this trial. Charles Couch, the chemical company owner, is supposed to confirm to the court that the receipt for arsenic, signed by Nancy, is genuine. Much to the surprise of Richard's attorney, Couch takes a good look and says the receipt is a fake.
Well, it looked like it had been photoshopped. You know, somebody had typed neatly, you know, and everything, and somebody came by and said, oh, we'll doctor this up, you know. It was kind of funny, you know.
He said, I did not sell that arsenic. Those are not my receipts. And I recall his statement was that I have a beautiful handwriting and I like my handwriting, or something to that effect. And so I write all my own receipts by hand. and this is a typed receipt. This is a fake.
And once doubt is cast on one crucial piece of evidence, Richard's house of cards begins to topple. The incest note implicating Nancy's brother is also shown to be a forgery, and the suspicion surrounding Bill Jr. is entirely lifted.
He went back and added in the incest part in his handwriting, but to look like Nancy's, to get that in front of the jury.
As the trial went on, I started having doubts. I was there a couple of different times to listen to the trial and the way things were being conducted. And that's when I started questioning, you know, what's going on here, and this certainly doesn't look good.
Whatever momentum they might have built, it was taken out from under them, because it looked like what they put on was just a lie. And at that point, you know, it's probably difficult for a jury to believe the defendant or the lawyer.
Indisputable evidence is mounting against Richard Lyon. The prosecution shows that Richard amassed a smorgasbord of potential poisons. Nancy's vitamin pills are analyzed and found to contain barium carbonate, a compound used in rat poison. Analysis of prescription drug capsules found in her bathroom cabinet reveals the presence of cyanide. There is also a paper trail. Richard used his own name to order the poisons and paid with personal checks.
The first thing most people do would be to, you know, you wipe your fingerprints off things, you clean up your tracks when you leave. I mean, this was a long, ongoing killing, and he made some very elementary mistakes.
There were a lot of circumstantial evidence, but when you tally it up, it was pretty devastating.
For somebody who is as intelligent as Richard, he was sloppy. He left a paper trail that ultimately led to his conviction. One of the things that we know about psychopaths is that they aren't necessarily intelligent. What they are is emotionally intelligent. They're really good at reading people and manipulating situations, but that doesn't mean that they're good at crossing their T's and dotting their I's when it comes to actually trying to kill someone.
Well, I think that many people were fooled by Richard for a long time. So every time you hear a story of a murder or a shooting, and the person's neighbor says, oh, he was such a nice guy, I'm so surprised. Really, all that shows is just how little they knew the person. It doesn't show that a really nice, wonderful person snapped.
Despite moments of doubt and paranoia, Nancy did nothing to prevent her own murder.
I think she couldn't really believe it herself, and if she told people, they would think that she was crazy. Just kind of an inability to accept it because it was so far out. I don't think most people really expect a loved one or someone that they've loved and had children with or a family member to hurt them. And so I think that part of her believed it, part of her down in her knew it, and part of her didn't want to believe it, and part of her just said, I'm not going to believe it.
You know, in the beginning of the trial, I was not convinced that he had killed Nancy. And I still am not sure that they proved it in trial. I think at the end of it, I came to the conclusion that, yeah, I guess he probably did it, but I'm not sure that the prosecution truly proved that he did it.
The jury needs no more convincing. After a 3-week trial, they find Richard Lyon guilty of first-degree murder. Richard is the only person in the courtroom who appears to be surprised.
You know, there's all kinds of murders. You know, people die in different ways. You know, arsenic is something that you have to plan to do. You have to acquire it. You have to get the guts up to deliver it, and you have to figure out a delivery method. And you have to do all those things, and then it works a little by little by little, so you have to be committed to keep doing it. You know, to me, that's just as personal as a stabbing or strangulation. And in this case, you're watching your wife, the mother of your children, slowly die, and you just keep giving doses and doses and doses until you accomplish your goal. To poison somebody over a period of time like that, that's pretty dastardly as far as I'm concerned. And I didn't really see any option other than the maximum sentence. That's what I thought was appropriate, and that's what I assessed.
To the relief of the Dillard family, Richard Lyon is sentenced to life. Nancy's brother, Bill Jr., is granted custody of the Lyons' two daughters. Richard continues to protest his innocence.
He just never seemed like that kind of person at all. I can't even fathom how that could happen. It still is just unbelievable to me.
Oh, I was sad. I was sad when they arrested him. I was sad when he was convicted. Because that was the end of what I had thought as a very wonderful, loving family.